And we're gonna begin Parag Beis, Shmuel Al Parag Beis. And last week we saw how Shmuel was born, Chana davened to Hashem to have a son, and finally she got a son, and she promised Hashem that this son will be dedicated to Hashem his whole life. And after he was old enough to serve Hashem, she brought him to Eli the Kohen, who was the high priest at the time. And he stayed there for basically the rest of his life. And this week the Parag Beis begins with Shiras Chana, the special prayer, the thank you prayer that Chana tells Hashem. And we're going to see how the sons of Eli were not exactly following in their father's footsteps. They were not such righteous people. We're going to see exactly what they did. And because what they did, the kahuna did not continue in their family anymore. So let's begin. The Shira of Chana, the special prayer of Chana, has the simple pshat. And the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel basically translated everything into Aramaic, and he brings down how, on a deeper level, the special prayer of Chana is a nevuah, is a prophecy to what's going to happen to the Jewish people later on, their salvation and their geula. So we're going to read every pasuk, and we'll see the simple pshat, and we're going to see what the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, how he explains this is a prophecy to their redemption in the future. So Pasuk Aleph begins, "Vatispal Chana v'toymer, Chana davens to Hashem," and she says, "Ala tzlibi b'Hashem, Roma karni b'Hashem, my heart is swelling, is happy with Hashem. Rachav pi al oivai, ki samachti b'shua secha, my mouth is now opened to answer my enemies, because now Hashem saved me." The commentators explain that who is she referring to when she says the enemies? She's referring to Penina, the other wife of Elkanah, her husband. She kept on, as we saw last week, she kept on making fun of her and teasing her. Sorry. She kept on making fun of her and teasing her. And now she's referring to Penina as her enemy. And she's saying, now I can finally answer my enemy because now I have children. I have a son. And we're going to see later on how she has more sons. And that will be the downfall of Penina, as we're going to see in a few psukim later. So the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, the commentator, explains that this pasuk is referring to the future redemption. It's referring to the war that they're going to have with the Plishtim. The Plishtim were the arch enemy of Israel, of the Jewish people living at the time. They were the neighboring nation living next to that land of Israel. And most of the battles that we're going to see in Sefer Shmuel are done with the Plishtim. Kind of like the Palestinians today. The similar, very similar name. Not to be politically incorrect. So she says, "V'tzaliyas chana baruch nevuah." She davened in Ruach HaKodesh, in a prophecy. And she said, "My son, Shmuel, is going to be a great prophet to Israel at his days. During his time, the Plishtim will fall apart, they will lose in war, and many, many miracles will be done to the Jewish people during the time of Shmuel. He will help facilitate a lot of these miracles at the war. And my heart is happy and swelling with the redemption that he's going to bring the Jewish people. Furthermore, his grandson Yoel, who was also a prophet to the Jewish people, he had 14 sons, and they will sing and dance with fiddles and harps, fiddles and harps. Once these miracles are done and they win, the Jewish people win at war, they will be brought to the temple. And she's referring also to the moving of the Aron. The Aron, which was the vessel in the temple that had the two Kruvim on it, the two angels, that when the Jewish people were doing well and doing mitzvahs, learning Torah, those two angels were facing each other. And when referring to the relationship that Hashem had with the Jewish people, and they were not doing the right thing, they kind of faced away from each other. And this Aron was brought from its temporary place in Shiloh to the temple, and all of the Jewish people will join in that party, that happy time, and they're all going to dance and sing when they finally bring the Aron to the temple. That's Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk Beis continues. Ein kodesh Hashem. There is no one holy like Hashem. Ki ein biltecha ve'ein sur ke'elokeinu. There is no one like you, Hashem, and there is no one stronger like you. In Hebrew it says ve'ein sur, no one stronger like you. But the commentators explain it's really a play on the words. Sur is like tzayar, a painter, an artist, meaning Hashem is the most beautiful. He's a very, very skilled artist. If you ever see a beautiful sunset, you see the colors that hit the sky, the way the sun reflects on the sky, and the different colors and shades of red and orange and blue. It's a beautiful picture. There's no picture in the world that can even come close to the beauty that Hashem shows us in this world. So Hashem is a very, very skilled artist, so to speak. And that's on a deeper level what this is referring to. Now, the Targum Barasa Manazil says that the prophecy of Chana in this pasuk is referring to Sancheriv. Sancheriv was the king of Ashur, and he came to fight the Jewish people in Jerusalem. Chazal tell us, or scholars tell us, that Sancheriv had so many soldiers that if each and every soldier would stand on the wall of Jerusalem and would spit into the city, Jerusalem would drown. Now, I don't know if it's literal, Jerusalem would actually drown, but it just comes to give us an idea of how many soldiers Sancheriv came to fight the Jewish people with. That was a lot of soldiers. And so, when he came, he set siege around Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was basically doomed. There was no way they can actually fight such a huge army. It was impossible. But Hashem, with His great mercy, brought forth a miracle where all the soldiers of Sancheriv ended up dying. They just went to sleep one night and did not wake up. They all died, and all their tents and their cattle and horses, whatever they brought with them, was just there, all around Jerusalem. Now, it's not clear, the Gemara talks about, if Sancheriv actually made it out or not. It's a dispute in the Gemara if he made it out alive, or he ended up dying together with his soldiers. But the Gemara does talk about Chizkiah. Chizkiah was the king in Jerusalem at the time. And the Talmud is, so to speak, upset at Chizkiah for not thanking Hashem and not performing what's called a shira. Like, for example, after the miracle of the splitting of the sea, Miriam was the prophet. She gathered all the girls, all the women of Israel, and they sang and danced. That was the shira, their song and prayer of thanks to Hashem for the miracle that He did for them. Chizkiah, on the other hand, after this great miracle of all the soldiers of Sancheriv dying, he did not go ahead and say Shira. He did not thank Hashem in song and dance. And the Talmud tells us that if he would have, then Mashiach would have come. It was a great potential for Mashiach to come at that time. And only one thing was missing. That Shira that Chizkiah, the king, did not perform, that was the only part that was missing for Mashiach to come. If he would have performed the Shira, then Tzencheriv would be what we call Gog Magog, the final war at the end of days, where it'll be a very, very terrible war for the world. It'll be very destructive to many parts of the world. Many people are supposed to die in that war. That'll be the final war before Mashiach comes. So Sancheriv would have been that the Gog and Magog, which are these two kings that are going to fight with each other, and that would fulfill that part of Mashiach coming. That would be the war of before Mashiach, and Chizkiah would have been able to be Mashiach himself because he was in that level of righteousness to be Mashiach. But because of that part that he missed, because he didn't perform the Shira, everybody missed out on a historic opportunity to bring Mashiach. However, this nace did occur, and it was a great redemption to the Jewish people. Okay, let's see Pasuk Gimel. Third Pasuk, Al Tarbu Tadarbu Gavaya Gavaya Yetzir Atak Mipichem. Don't speak very highly talk about how, righteous and special you are. Kikel Dayas Hashem V'loy Niskanu Alilas. Hashem knows exactly what you are, and you cannot exactly fool him. So even though people seem very powerful in this world, and they seem like they're way at the top of the game, many times they fall over because Hashem knows better than that. The Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel explains that this is referring to Nebuchadnezzar. Chana is now bringing prophecy about King Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon, of Babel. And he will, in the future, he will control the Jewish people. And he will, so to speak against Hashem. He would try to destroy the temple. And he would put down the Jewish people. It's going to be a very, very difficult and challenging time for the Jews. But she says that Nebuchadnezzar is going to end up paying for everything he did to the Jewish people. And everything he spoke badly and against Hashem, he will in the future pay for it. In fact, we mentioned a little bit during Megillas Esther how he went to war against, it wasn't really him, but his son, Belshazzar, went to war against Persia. And even though in the beginning of the war it seemed like Babylon is going to win, and they actually did win the first war, and they made this huge party, and over there at that party, Belshazzar came forth wearing the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest at the temple. And that night, while there, Belshazzar, the king, was partying together with his ministers and his advisors and close friends, his hand appears on the wall and writes the following words: "Mine, mine, tekalu parke, weighed, measured, and divided." Meaning, this bold move of coming forth, dressing, wearing the clothes of the Kohen Gadol was weighed and measured, and you will be punished for what you have done. Not only for the actions that Belshazzar did, but also for the actions that his father, Nebuchadnezzar, did to the Jewish people. Belshazzar did terrible, terrible things to the Jewish people. When he came first into the temple, he saw this blood boiling on the floor. And he could not figure out where this blood came from. Now, where the blood really came from was because the Jewish people were not doing what they were supposed to do, they were going against Hashem. Then the Navi Zechariah, the prophet Zechariah, came forth and was rebuking them for what they have done. And so they went ahead and killed him. And they killed him actually right there in the temple. After they killed him, his blood did not stop boiling. His blood remained there on the floor, and it just kept on boiling. It was boiling blood, and it kept on going for years and years. When Belshazzar finally came into the Beis HaMikdash, into the temple, he saw this blood, and he asked the people, what is this blood? Where is it from? And they told them, oh yeah, listen, we have sacrifices here all the time, so the place is full of blood. This blood is from the sacrifices. And he went ahead and he brought another animal to see if it's similar blood. And he slaughtered the animal. And he saw, in fact, that the blood was different. So he knew that they were lying. He asked them, tell me where it's from. And they finally realized they cannot deny him anymore. So they told him exactly what happened, how they killed this great prophet, who happened to be a priest as well. And he decided that he's going to make sure this blood stops boiling. So he went ahead, and he brought all the priests at the time, and he killed them right there on the spot. And that did not stop the blood from boiling. He brought in thousands and thousands of children, and he killed them right there on the spot. And that did not stop the blood from boiling. Finally, he turns to Hashem and says, I killed so many of them. How many do I need to kill in order to stop the blood from boiling? And at that point, the blood stopped from boiling. In any case, Belshazzar was a very evil and cruel man, just like his father, Nebuchadnezzar. And over here, Chana is, in her prophecy, is talking about how Nebuchadnezzar and his son will be punished for all the horrors they brought to the Jewish people. Even though they didn't see it at the time, but in the future, they will be punished for it.
What was Belshazzar's motivation to stop the blood?
That's a good question. It's not very clear in the Gemara why he wanted to stop the blood, but he kind of tried to, so to speak, challenge Hashem. You know, like, oh, you think, you know, you're going to make this blood boil? I'm going to make sure that's going to stop. He kind of, like, was a control freak, and, you know, say, I'm going to take my matters into my hands and make sure this blood will stop boiling. Pasuk Dalet continues. Keshes Giboirim Chitim. Many times the arch, the bow of great warriors, which seems very powerful, will end up breaking. Benichshalim Azru Chayal. Also the opposite. People who are weak and aren't able to fight and not able to fight will regain strength and become powerful. And the Targum Menos of Menuziel explains that this part of the prophecy is referring to Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great will come and fight the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, and which will be very, very weak at the time. And to them too will be done many, many miracles. Pasukei Sveim Balechem Niskaru Ureivim Chadelu. People who are wealthy and full are not hungry for bread. It will come a time where they're going to have to remember what bread was because they will be so poor and they will have nothing to eat. And also the opposite: some people that are poor will stop being poor and become wealthy again. Adakar Yol the Shiva Varabas Bonim Umlola. So too, a woman who's barren will end up having 7 children. We're going to see in the future that Chana did have more children. We're going to see exactly how that panned out. A woman who's going to have many, many children will lose many of them, which actually ended up happening to Penina, the other wife of Elkanah. Because she made fun of Chana, many of her children ended up dying. In fact, every child that Chana had, 2 of Penina's children died. So, the first 4 children that Chana had, Penina lost 8 children. And the last 2 children, Penina begged Chana to please daven to Hashem and make sure that her last 2 children will not die. And when Chana gave birth to her 5th child, she davened to Hashem that Penina's children will not die. And in fact, they remained alive. And so Chana ended up having 5 children, but it's considered that she had 7 because she prayed for the last 2 children of Penina, and so it's considered that she had 7 children, even though only 5 were really hers. Now, the Targum Menos of Menuziel explains that this part of the prophecy is referring to Haman. Haman as we know, as we saw in Megillas Esther, he decreed to kill all the Jews. And he kind of was fighting Mordechai and Esther, who were trying to annul this decree. And it seemed like Mordechai and Esther were in a weaker position, and Haman was great and powerful. And what ended up happening at the end was exactly the opposite. Just like in Hannah's story, when she was like weak, and Penina was powerful because Penina had children and Hannah didn't, and then everything turned over. Hannah had children, and Penina ended up losing almost all of her children. So too, the story with Haman and Mordechai and Esther, exactly that same episode happened. Haman was very powerful and second to the king. Everyone was bowing down to him. He became very, very weak politically until he ended up actually being killed by the king. And Mordechai and Esther, who were in a weaker position, that's the way it seemed. Everything turned over, and Mordechai was now in the old position of Haman, where he was second to the king. And so they were in that position of power. And Hannah continues on to say that the same thing will end up happening with Jerusalem. Jerusalem will be this barren wasteland, will be empty, and no one's going to want to live there. And Romy, referring to the Western culture, will be full and flourishing, doing well. And what's going to happen when Mashiach comes is exactly the opposite. Yerushalayim will be the epitome, the most desirable and coveted place to live in the world. It will be full and flourishing and doing well. And Romy, the Western culture, will be empty and destroyed. It's actually going to end up being destroyed. That's what she's saying when Mashiach will come. This is the end of the prophecy of Hannah, where she's speaking about the prophecy, what's going to end up happening later in the Jewish people. But her prayer on the pshat level continues. So let's see pasuk vav. Shem meimi sumachaya. Shem brings life and death. Mayrit she'ol v'yal. He brings people to the lowest point, and he can also raise them to the highest. Pasuk zayin. Hashem mayrit shumashir. Hashem makes people lose all their money, and he makes people wealthy. Mashpil af merevim. He lowers people and raises them. Pasuk Ches, making ma'afar dal, ma'ash bois yorim evyon, le'shiyayim nadivim, v'kisa kovidun chilim. He brings people who are doing poorly financially, and he brings them to a high position politically. Ki la'ashem b'tzuki eret, v'yosh ha'salem tevel. Hashem has all resources, and he can do as he wishes. V'ragli chasid of Yishmar, he will guard the steps of the people who are loyal to him. Rishayim b'choshech yidamu. Evil people will die in the darkness. Kiloy v'koyach higbar ish. Person might think he's powerful and he's capable, but really it's all up to Hashem. And if Hashem doesn't want him to be successful, he won't. Pasuk yud. Hashem yichatu merivav olav b'shamayim yarem. Hashem yodin afsi aretz. Hashem will destroy all his enemies, and he will give strength mighty to his king and to Mashiach when he ends up coming. This is the end of the prayer of Hannah. And we now continue with the story, what happened to Shmuel. Vayelech Elkanah, who was the father of Shmuel, went over to Ramah, basically back to his house in the Ramah. He left Shmuel to serve Eli, who was the priest at the time. He was the priest in charge. The sons of Eli were evil men. They did not serve Hashem the way they were supposed to. What did they do wrong? So the pasuk tells us, the way it was done when everyone brought their sacrifice. Kol ish zevach zevach uvo na'ar kohen kevash al basar v'mazeg shalosh shanayim biyodai. When the person bringing the sacrifice will come with the meat, the sons of Eli would go ahead and take this three-prong fork. They would actually go ahead and take their own share of meat before they brought the sacrifice on the mizbech. And it's actually, it's not supposed to be that way. It was supposed to be that they're supposed to first bring the sacrifice and then take their part. But they made sure that they got their share before they brought the sacrifice to Hashem. Veika Bakir or Veduda Bakalach Bapur, these are four different types of pots. They would put the meat in one of these pots. Kol Shayala Mazagich Ikachakoin Boy. Anything that would come up in this three-prong fork, that's what they would take to themselves. That's what they would do to everyone who brought their sacrifice in Shiloh, which is where the temple was. Even before they brought the actual korban, they would tell the people who brought the sacrifice, first, before you bring the sacrifice, you have to make sure the kohen has his part. They would not wait until the meat was cooked, they would actually take it while it was still raw. And the person bringing the sacrifice would say, no, what do you mean? First, we're going to bring the sacrifice, and then you can go ahead and take your share of meat, whatever you want. He would say, no, you are now going to give me what I want, and if not, I will take it forcefully. I will force you to give me my share. This did not find favor in the eyes of Hashem. They disgraced the sacrifice of Hashem. Shmuel was actually serving together with them. He did not learn from their actions. He did not follow in their footsteps. He was able to remain strong and do the right way, even though they were the ones who were in charge, but he stood his ground and he will not do as they did. His mother, every time she came up to the temple, she would bring with her this special cloak that she made for him. Because, you know, he's a growing boy, yet didn't have a mother with him. He was living with Eli, who was the great priest. And therefore, she brought him a special cloak that he would wear while he was serving in the temple. And every year she brought him a new one, which she made. Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife, Chana. He blessed Chana that she will actually have more children other than Shmuel. This is what we saw before. Hashem blessed Chana, and she ended up having three boys and two girls. Shmuel stayed. He was the oldest. He stayed with Eli in the temple. Eli was very, very old. This is a very serious accusation that the Navi is accusing the sons of Eli of. It says over here that what the sons of Eli would do is they would go ahead and they would be intimate with the wives of the Jewish men who brought their sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the commentators explain that it's not exactly what the way the Navi displays it. They didn't actually live with those women. What happened is every woman, when she goes through the sacrifice, through the process of becoming pure, so she can be with her husband, the final stage is they have to go ahead and bring a sacrifice in the temple. The problem was that the sons of Eli would go ahead and they would make them wait, they would stall, and therefore those women would not be able to bring their sacrifice on time, and they were not able to go home to be with their husbands, and they had to end up sleeping over there in Jerusalem before going back to their husbands because it took so long to bring their sacrifices. And that is considered by Hashem that they lived with these women because they avoided them, they stopped them from going back to be with their husbands. That's according to one explanation. Another explanation is that they caused these women to sin because they were stalling in bringing these sacrifices. They weren't efficient at their job, and therefore all the men and women would crowd together all around the temple and the Mishkan, and that would cause them to kind of like they would end up staying there and lying down, and that would cause the men and women to sin because they're all crowded in the same place. And that's why the sons of Eli are accused of being with these women. Not that they actually did it, but they caused either not, they avoided them from being with their husbands, or they caused them to sin with other men because they were all crowded around the temple. Pasuk Chav Gimel continues, Varmalayim, this Eli told the sons, Lama tasim kodvarim ha'ele, why are you doing these things? Asher anechi shamaasti v'rechem, which I hear that you are doing. Ra'im meis kolam ha'ele. These are very horrible things that you're doing to the people, to the Jewish people. Al bonai, ki lo'i toiv ha'shmua, the rumor that is going around is not good. Asher anechi shamaam ma'virim am Hashem, you are causing the children of Hashem to sin. Who's gonna pray? Who's gonna help? Who's gonna justify these sins that you are causing these people to do? Commentators explain that because they sinned so severely, there is a situation where a person sinned so much where Hashem goes ahead and he stops him. He will not allow this person to do tshuva. And since the sons of Eli did such grave and serious actions, Hashem did not allow them to do tshuva and to change their ways and to become better. Because what they did was so wrong and so horrible. Shmuel, on the other hand, is going the right way, and he's growing up to be worshiping Hashem in the right way. Gam im Hashem, gam im anashim. Also with Hashem, because he has a good relationship with Hashem, and also with the people. V'yavo ish Elokim el Eli. This is actually referring to Elkanah. The Navi doesn't tell us who this is, but the commentators explain this is Elkanah, the prophet who came to Eli and told him, Elkanah tells Eli, I appeared to your forefathers back in Egypt, in the house of Paru. He's referring to Pinchas. Pinchas was the original Kohen who was chosen to be serving Hashem. Because he was the one who saved the Jewish people from sinning. When the Jewish people were sinning with the daughters of Moab, the Jewish men were seduced by these Moab women to be with them. They had a very, very crafty system. What they did was they would appoint this old lady to sit in front of a tent with a lot of merchandise around her, selling all the different goods that the Moabites had to offer. And the Jewish people, you know, would go around to see what kind of deal they could make. You know, Jews are always good businessmen. They try to see whatever they can get. And the older woman would say, yeah, this is the price of what you're interested in. And after that, after the woman would, this old woman would quote a price, the younger woman, who was inside the tent, would come out and say, why are you overpricing this thing? You don't have to sell it for so expensive. You could sell it for much cheaper. And she would offer a much lower price to this Jewish guy. And then she would tell him, come in, I have even better deals for you. I can give you really, really cheap deals. And he ended up coming into the tent with her, and she would kind of try to seduce him, and when he would want to go out and be with her, she would say, I'll be with you under the condition that you commit idol worship, and if you commit this idol worship, then I will be with you. And in fact, many, many Jews ended up falling prey to this trick, and not only did they commit idol worship, but they also ended up being intimate with these Moabite women. And so Pinchas, when he saw this, he was very, very upset, because not only did the Jewish people end up sinning, but the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, the, so to speak, the president of the tribe of Shimon, also went ahead and he was living with not only one of the women of Moab, but one of the more important women of Moab. He was actually living with the daughter, the princess of the king of Moab. And when he came over to her, she said, "My father told me I should only be with the greatest Jew, which was Moses." And he said, "Listen, I'm also the president of the tribe of Shimon. I'm a pretty important guy." And so she agreed to be with him. And when Pinchas saw this, he took a spear. Now he knew they would not just let him into the tent and the people of Shimon the tribe of Shimon would not let him kill Shimon. So what he did was he took off the top of the spear, put it in his pocket, and it appeared just like a staff, kind of like a stick. And he was kind of like walking along with his staff. And when he approached this tent, the tribe of Shimon, they came over to him and said, "What are you doing here? What do you want?" And he says, "I also want to commit a sin. I'm also a part of this." And so they said, "Okay, you can go ahead and have your turn." And once he went ahead, he took out from his pocket, he took the head of the spear, put it on, and he killed both of them at the same time. He kind of stuck it through both of their bodies, and he picked them up. That was one of the miracles that was done, was he was able to pick up two bodies at the end of his spear and lift them up high. And the other miracle was he was actually able to walk out of the tent in this way, even though the tent, you kind of have to like bend down. As you go out, he was able to come out holding the spear up high, coming out of the tent. And he showed this to the Jewish people. And they realized that they have all done something wrong. And once they all realized that, that's what stopped the Jewish people from being dead, from being killed, because there was a plague going on at the time, which was killing many, many Jews. And once Pinchas did this, he stopped the plague. And because of that action, he was chosen to be the priest and serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. Later on, this honor was taken away from him because of different things that he did. That is, not that he did, but his descendants that ended up doing. And it was given to the family of Eli. And now Elkanah is coming over to Eli and telling him, "Because your sons have done wrong, the kahuna, serving Hashem, the right to serve Hashem, will be taken from you and given back to the family of Pinchas. I will give it back to the house of Pinchas." He's now giving rebuke to Eli and to his children. Pasuk Chavtes, Lama tivetu bezivchi ubeminchos yashu tzivisi moin utechabedes manecha mimeni levriachem reishis kol minchas Yisrael la'ami. You are disgracing the sacrifices that are brought to the temple, and you, so to speak, you honor your sons who are doing wrong. Not that he was actually honoring them, but he did not tell them off enough. And that's why it's considered that Eli was, in a way, a part of this. Therefore, Hashem is going to go ahead and say, "Omar amarti beisecho beisavichi salach lefanai ad olam." It was really supposed to be that the kahuna, the right of serving Hashem in the temple, will be yours forever. But now, because your sons have done wrong, I will take it away from you, because people who disgrace me are not deserving to serve me at the temple. No one in your household will end up being an important kohen, an important priest. They will be priests, but they will be looked down upon. Your whole days, there will never ever be a priest in your house that will breach a high position, an esteemed position. And You're now telling him that your descendants will actually end up dying out because your children will end up growing old. They will not get married, not have any children, and they will end up dying out. There will be nothing left from your household, your descendants. This will be the sign to you. Once two of your children, Hophni and Pinchas, die the same day, you will know that from then on, the kahuna will be cut off from your family and be given back to the house of Pinchas, who had it before. I will bring it back to a loyal kohen, a loyal priest, who will do my will. He will be, from then on, he will be the kohen, the priest, for the rest of days. Everyone, other kohanim that are left in your house, will now be kind of like second-class citizens. They will be kohanim, but they will also be like second-class. They will be kind of like, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, and they will be looked down upon. They will kind of beg and ask to be a part of things because no one is going to want to bring them and be a part of things. That was the punishment that was brought to the sons of Eli, even though Eli himself was a righteous man, but because his sons had done wrong, as we saw what they did, therefore the kohen was taken away from them and given back to Pinchas. Okay, we're going to stop here.